Edge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham, and I'm joined by Scott German, and we are about to come out of our UVA sports slumber as Scott and I will be heading up to Pittsburgh this weekend for the football season opener, UVA and Pitt, Saturday night from Heinz Field. We'll be able to watch. I'm not sure how many of you guys listening will be able to watch because of the ACC network situation, but hey, Scott, you know, we did the ACC kickoff a few weeks ago. Now the season's actually upon us. I guess, hey, this starts our whirlwind between football season, basketball season. It's UVA sports for about the next 6 or 7 months.
Which is fine with me. Life is beginning, or the earth is beginning to spin on its axis normally for me.
And so, you know, first thoughts, you know, it's been a little bit of time since we were down in Charlotte with the at the ACC kickoff and, you know, kind of getting our heads into football. I'm looking at this UVA-Pitt game, UVA 2-point favorite, 2.5-point favorite on the road at Pitt. Obviously, it's a pivotal game. It may be, it's not, neither of these teams ranked in the preseason top 25, but this could be maybe the most important game of the weekend. I know there is a top 25 game. What is it, Auburn and Oregon, I think, playing, but intersectional matchup there. This game could be, in a way, like an ACC Coastal Championship game, last year's defending champ Pitt, this year's preseason favorite UVA. And so, I mean, we get out of the gate here for the first time in a while with a really, really important game. First time a UVA's had a season opener like this in quite a long time.
Oh, absolutely. Huge game for Virginia. You know, I had lunch today with our colleague, Jerry Radcliffe, and you know, he kind of summed it up pretty good, pretty accurately. This is a really huge game for Virginia in that if you look at the way the schedule unfolded, they're at Pitt, they come back home with what should be, a win over William & Mary, and it sets the stage for that huge game against Florida State, that huge showdown there. You go up to Pittsburgh, you take care of business, and you win that football game. And, wow, you're setting yourself up for just a tremendous start to your season. Flip side of it, you go up there and lose, and, you know, the naysayers are going to be out. Okay, same old Virginia. Can't really play that well on the road. Go up against a decent team and lose. And the other side of the coin is huge game for Virginia. It's kind of a no-lose situation for Pitt because, you know, they're – you know, a lot of new players, a lot of inexperienced players coming in, new offensive coordinator. They're underdogs. They win that game, and wow, they're setting their season up for some really special things. And if they lose it, well, they were predicted to lose. So it's a much, much bigger, larger ramifications for Virginia than for Pitt in this game.
Pitt has won 4 straight in this series, including last year's game in November in Charlottesville. And it, folks might not remember this, but Virginia actually was first place in the Coastal going into that game, 4-1 record going into that game against Pitt. And Pitt winning that game, that's pretty much what cemented Pitt as the Coastal champion last year. The Pitt team is a team that had, under Pat Narduzzi, has, you know, hung its hat on its running game. They got to replace 4 offensive linemen, 4 starting offensive linemen. One guy will be making his first career start and playing his first career college game on the offensive line. They also have a grad transfer from Michigan who didn't play a lot there. A couple guys who saw some action as reserves last year. Also, the 2 running backs, Quadri Allison and Darren Hall, who ate Virginia up last year. Well, are both in the NFL now. So a lot of change on Pitt's side. And you mentioned new offensive coordinator Mark Whipple, former UMass coach. So, you know, disadvantage for EVA is, you know, no game tape of what they will do offensively, Pitt will do offensively, except for what you might have seen in the spring. Everybody trades their tapes of their spring games. So, but the other side of it is, and I saw Pat Narduzzi talk about this. I watched the Pat Narduzzi press conference this week. from earlier this week, he talked about how difficult it's going to be to get ready for Bryce Perkins from Pitt's perspective. He talked about how last year they played in November and they were in midseason form defensively, and you're coming off a summer where largely you don't have live tackling of quarterbacks. I mean, you know, in fact, you know, he was talking about how this week they're going to have to tackle their scout team quarterbacks, and he's afraid. You know, he saw some indications in first practice on Monday for game week that his guys were a little reluctant, even without having a red jersey on the scout team quarterback, to hit the quarterback. And he said, you know, Bryce Perkins is a guy that you have to kind of, you know, you have to really corral. So, 6'3", 230 pounds with all that speed. So that could be an interesting issue. A few interesting issues really for both sides in playing a tough opponent week one. And those are a couple from the Pitt perspective.
Yeah, and from the UVA side, our running, our depth is still probably somewhat of an issue. Running backs, our backfield is kind of an unknown quantity too. This game in every aspect is going to just, this thing's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. I know we're both hoping for the best, that this Virginia team that takes the field is going to be just a continued progression of what we saw in the Belk Bowl. But, you know, it's a new season. Even though they got a lot of experience coming back for Virginia, especially offensively, still a new season and a new chapter to be written.
So that's Saturday night, 7:30. I would say to the listeners out there, tune in to the ACC Network to watch, but that's another storyline for week one of college football. The ACC Network, largely not available to a lot of folks, especially in Virginia. If you're a listener and you live in Virginia, really, if you live anywhere, Comcast Xfinity is one of the major cable carriers in this country, but certainly in Virginia, the Carolinas, the ACC territory. And Comcast does not have, as of when we're talking here on Wednesday afternoon, has not signed on with ESPN to carry the ACC Network. So that's going to be tough. I wonder, Scott, if we may be the only people, because we're physically there. I mean, you can subscribe to YouTube TV, you can subscribe to Hulu TV, you can subscribe to, I think it's PlayStation View, but those are all $50 per month propositions if you want to jump one. And it's not just the UVA game, also the Virginia Tech Boston College game on Saturday, and also the Georgia Tech Clemson game on Thursday that are affected by this. And, you know, I'm getting indications, Scott, from what I'm reading, and it's kind of just reading some tea leaves, but the reports I'm reading in various news publications, there's a feeling this may linger on for a while from a Comcast, ESPN, ACC Network standpoint. So, the move by the ACC to put so many games on the network was a move to force the cable carriers to carry the ACC network, but it may backfire at least for a while, and keep the fan base from being able to see these games.
When we were both at the ACC kickoff and we heard all that, we read, you know, we listened to all the propaganda from the commissioner of ACC, John Slover. We listened to them talking about, this is normal, we're not sweating anything yet, this is the way the other major conferences watch. But, you know, what I keep thinking about, the other major conferences started 5, 6, 7 years ago, before the real wave of table cutting started to begin to take place. You know, I'm just wondering if there's these cable companies now losing customers by the thousands, people cutting the cable and finding other ways to get their television streaming, for instance, over the air, digital antennas. I'm just wondering if they underestimated how many subscribers these cable companies were actually losing, which the customers that are left, I wonder how many of them really care that the cable provider that they're tied with even carry the ACC network. I wonder if that is playing an important role in this, because if you, like you just said, if you really are a diehard fan of the ACC, you're going to find a way to get the game because there's multiple platforms right now that are streaming. But if you're just a casual pedestrian fan, I don't think you're going to do it. And I don't think you're going to even call the cable company to voice your satisfaction with that. I really believe that's where they are right now. They're just not – these cable companies, you know as well as I do, it's fine. If they were getting bombarded, deluged with customers saying they're going to cancel, they'd be on. They'd be on. But I don't think the Comcast of the world or the Cox, I just don't think that's happening like the ACC folks in Greensboro thought it would happen. Now, it may, if this lingers on and people gradually tune into their local station expecting to see a game, and instead they're getting reruns of Leave It to Beaver, that may prompt it, especially if it lingers on in the basketball when folks in Charlottesville, Richmond area tune in to watch UVA Syracuse and it's not available. That may be what, pushes this thing to that level, but I don't think it's happening anytime soon.
I will tell you from one indicator that people are interested in this story, because I wrote a quick piece. It maybe took me 5 minutes to write yesterday about how I called my competing cable company in the Waynesboro area, Lumos Networks, the former Intellos, the former CFW, offers a cable package and has for a number of years. And they actually have the ACC network on Lumos. And Lumos is available in the Waynesboro area down to Lexington, I think over towards Charlottesville. I'm not too sure how far over and how many neighborhoods penetration, that kind of thing, it has in that area. But the Lumos networks in my area actually offers an alternative. And so I had consciously decided to wait until yesterday, Tuesday, to make this call, because I actually thought, hey, if I call on Tuesday, they can still come out on Wednesday and hook me up. And I can watch the Georgia Tech Clemson game on Thursday. Wouldn't that be awesome? Turns out that I couldn't get an appointment until next Tuesday because they have so many people they're changing over from Comcast. So isn't that interesting? Just in our little local market here. And close to 10,000 people have clicked on that story. So there is interest. And the thing is, too, I'd say, Scott, about your point about cable cord cutters, if you're a sports fan, you're probably not a cord cutter. If you want ESPN and its family of networks, I mean, you can do the other things. You can get YouTube TV, et cetera, the Hulu and the PlayStation View. But if you do that, you're still paying for the ACC network. You're still going to have to end up paying $5 for the ACC network to get it, and you can get it easily. And so I tweeted at Comcast to let them know that I've got Lumos coming out next Tuesday service me, and that I paid $275 a month for cable and internet services from Comcast, and that will go away. That's $3,000 plus per year that they're going to lose. And if what I'm the sense I'm getting from Lumos, based on how far into the future I had to schedule my service hookup, is any indication, there's going to be a lot of $3,000 a year customers in just in my market that Comcast is going to lose. I'm going to watch ACC sports. I'm not going to let it go into basketball season. I'm not going to miss all these games. So the market will bear itself out. The ACC network's available other places. I found Lumos. Other folks can go to YouTube TV. Other folks can go to Hulu, wherever they want to go. But ACC network's out there, and it's a business decision, and I'll just give my money to somebody else, I guess.
Yeah, and Waynesboro, Central Valley is not unique, because I also know a similar situation with Brent in the Richmond area, where they are currently on Xfinity Comcast, and they are now switching to Verizon. Uh-huh. So most of the major metropolitan areas are served by at least two major cable providers. In Richmond, it's Xfinity, and then Verizon Fios, and Verizon is also already on part on the ACP network. Norfolk is Cox and Time Warner, and I believe neither are currently, but you know it's just a matter of time before one buckles and gets it. So I think it's just a waiting game, but I really do believe the ACC may be underestimated a little bit, at least having been to the ACC kickoff and listening to the confidence that the commissioner was speaking of. I really believe they thought that by the 22nd of August, which was last Thursday, there would be more providers jumping on board. So I will say this, moving ahead, I'm not sure if you've had a chance to watch much of the ACC network, but I have, and it lacks a lot to be desired. They are going to really have to, you know, they rolled out their initial, and we saw them down in Charlotte, we saw their initial talent level. We saw the Mark Packers and the West Durhams and the football panelists. And having watched them now for about a week, watched the morning program that, you know, the studio that they built in the basement of West Durham's home, if you remember, that's where that show's originating from. I haven't been in your studio in West Virginia. Your studio in Waynesboro, Virginia would hold its own.
Okay.
To that so-called studio that they built in West Durham. So I'm not sure West Durham, maybe him and Packer built that studio, because it is rank amateurism.
Well, and I bet theirs doesn't have a pool table in it either, so.
Sure it doesn't. 5 or 6 barking dogs, that's a luxury with, you know, having them run around your feet. Which for me, dog run was wonderful. But you know, it's amateurism. It's really, and the two of those two guys are horrible. They are, you know, obviously in their mind they're legends. They're Hall of Fame legends, and basically they're just happen to be children of legends. Mark Packer being Billy Packer's son, and Wes Durham being the legendary Hugh Durham. Woody Durham's son. They're not going to last long because they're not good. And then the football talent that they've assembled is even worse. Mark Britt belongs on a football field. He looks bored. He looks as though he is thinking that, oh my goodness, what am I doing on here with these clowns? I mean, his answers to some of the questions are very smirk. One of the commentators commented about, made a comment. One of the other panelists said something about the Miami team had a lot more talent than people realized. And Mark Rick said, and who do you think's responsible for that? Meaning himself, who was the head coach of Miami last year. Well, if he was that good of a head coach, he would still be the head coach of Miami. And even the production level of some of their features are just not good. They're going to have to really amp this up. If you're not watching the games, then there's very little of value to get you tuned in at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. But
you know what's interesting? As you say that, it makes me think. I'm a subscriber and have been since WWE Network, the wrestling company, launched its network in 2014. So about 5 years, I've been paying $9.99 per month for WWE Network. And, you know, WWE Network is different in one sense than ACC Network in this sense. I mean, you can turn it on and watch it as if it was just regular TV, just like CBS or HBO or anything else. There's stuff on right now that's just on. But there's also, I mean, there's like this huge library of archival stuff, you know, old shows, old pay-per-view shows, matches from before, interviews, segments, documentaries. There's a lot of content. There's far more content than a person could watch in their lifetime. But here's what I do. I watch once a month. They have a live pay-per-view type event on a Sunday night, and that's what I get. That's what I pay the $9.99 per month for. I very rarely watch anything else on it. And so I think about that, and then I think about the ACC Network. And the ACC Network has 24/7 content. It's got that morning show you talked about. Maybe they need to use my studio. Maybe they need to hire me, and I can talk ACC. I've been known to do that before.
You can run horn because it sounds like a team. We can do a better job. they're my age people trying to attract an audience of millennials.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just, it's a disaster. They won't. I'll bet you a steak dinner somewhere that they won't last the first year of the network. They'll be replaced because their show is not going to garner any ratings.
So they have that, and then I can imagine, not having seen the network yet, and I will starting next week, and we'll talk next week, and I'll give my own review too, and we can kind of compare some notes there on a podcast. But I would imagine that after that morning show, they probably have some filler content during the day, you know, maybe some talk show type things, maybe some replays of games. I assume a lot of replays of games. And then as we start our season up here, the fall season up here, there'll be a lot of replays of games, especially football games. But really what you're getting the network for is and ESPN and ACC are putting the good stuff on the network and making you get it. Just like ESPN is pushing a lot of content to its ESPN Plus, you know, that pay service. ESPN's paying billions of dollars for the rights to UFC, for example, and they're making UFC fans go to ESPN Plus and pay $4.99 per month to be able to watch it and then pay on top of that for pay-per-views. And so, you know, but what we're going to watch it for is for football and for basketball. And some of us will watch baseball. You and I are baseball, and we'll talk some more baseball coming up later in the podcast. We're baseball people, so we'll watch baseball. But, you know, for the most part, you're just going to watch, you know, the football and basketball games. And so the rest of it's just fluff. It's just filler. And you're watching a lot of fluff and filler now because we haven't had a football game yet. And I'll say this. I know from having read a number of really good stories, The Athletic wrote a really good piece, behind-the-scenes piece on this a couple weeks ago. That content is largely produced on campus by the school, you know, people at the schools, and a lot of that work is being done by student production assistants, some of whom aren't even paid. So, yeah, that's why it looks so amateur, because it pretty much is amateur.
For sure, it is, and like I said, I was very disappointed. Everything, every aspect of it. It's not. I was thinking it would be ESPN level because, after all, ESPN is the owner of the content. I mean, they're producing it. Well, they're supporting it. I don't know how much producing. But if you're tuning in to watch the ACC network and you think that it's going to remotely resemble the ESPN network, you are going to be in for the surprise of your life. It looks like a high school production compared to ESPN. And I just can't believe they spent this much time, 3 or 4 years, to roll out a product that, in my opinion, and again, it's just my opinion, is that inferior. I was thinking that the ACC would blow everyone away, and I've watched the SEC network, and it's somewhat better. It's really not a whole lot better because they kind of format their programming the same. They have a morning talk show. So, I'll be very interested to get your thoughts on it because you're in the business, but from just the casual observer who watches sports a lot and watches all sorts of programming, this one's just not cutting it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting for me too. Yeah, putting my actual broadcasting hat on. I've already started my fall season with ESPN3 and ESPN Plus broadcast of soccer. I did it my first broadcast last week. I got another one coming up Friday. Those are also produced on site, and so it'll be interesting to see that. So I mentioned we would talk some baseball, and we've got to because we both are fans, and this is another reason I can't cut a cord. I can't watch Masson if I don't have an actual cable provider. So all the folks out there who were commenting, tweeting, hey, just get YouTube TV. Well, YouTube TV can't show Masson. Neither can the MLB package, which I also paid for a couple weeks ago, so I could watch that Bill Walton game. If you're an O's fan, a Nats fan, you've got to have Masson. Well, Scott's the O's fan. I'm the Nats fan. And we have one more game this season. And Scott, I noted this. We were trading texts this morning. I noted this in a column I wrote today too. The Nats are 54-27 in their last 81 games. That's half a season. That's 108 win pace baseball. But they're 1-2 in that stretch against the O's, who are 44-88 this season. That's 333 baseball. That's not good baseball. But that's how baseball is. It doesn't matter what your record is. It matters what happens in between the lines that night. And the O's, as bad as they are, and the Nats as good as they are, the O's have a two-game winning streak against the Nats dating back to July. So, man, oh, man, baseball's a fun sport.
That's why it's the best sport, because as a fan of one team, you feel like you could have that vested interest in the team. I mean, this has been a horrible season for the Orioles. As horrible as it's been, it's going to end up being much better than last year because they're within one win of equaling, this is hard to believe, of equaling their total win output of last season, which was only 45 games. Well, they still are on the cusp of tying at 44, and they still got another week in this month left, plus the entire month of September. And if you look at the schedule in September, it's very favorable because, one, it doesn't include the Yankees. Two, it doesn't include the Red Sox, but for a hand, just a couple of games, three games. And there's some other bottom feeders that they play, like Kansas City. I believe they even have a series against Detroit left, which, believe it or not, has a worse record than the Orioles. So, last night's game, you probably wrote about it in your column. I haven't read that yet. I will. You've got the hottest team in baseball, the team that is just clubbing the ball the last 10 games, playing the team that had won 43 games, that had the highest ERA among their starters of any team in the American League, for certain. And they're throwing out a pitcher that they picked up off, I call it, they went to Ollie's bargain outlet and got the pitcher off waivers. And he goes out and throws a six-inning shutout. And then they follow it up with a pitcher that's only making his second or third major league appearance, that's been literally riddled with arm injury since the day he was drafted 6 years ago. And he's throwing 98-mile fastballs that the Nats wouldn't hit if they were still swinging at them. And then they throw, the reliever comes in and throws a perfect ninth inning that easily could have brought in a keg of dynamite. And the Orioles come along with a 2-0 shutout. Now, how, not being an Nats fan, I'm certain you don't look at this as a thing of beauty, but as a baseball fan, that's just remarkable. That's just so typical of how baseball, especially at the major league level, plays out, because everybody has superstars on their team.
Yeah, you don't see this in any other sport. You don't see a top college basketball team lose to a team with a 5-27 record. You don't see Alabama go out and lose to somebody from the MAC with a 2-10 record. You don't see those games aren't competitive. But in baseball, yeah, you can. It's all about who the pitcher. And even like he said, in the pitcher named Aaron Brooks, and I texted Scott last night, hey, is this the same guy that played quarterback for us 20 years ago? Aaron Brooks goes into the game with a 3-9 record, I think it was, and a 6.2 ERA, something like that. But he had his last start had been a good start. And I watched the Nats broadcast. The Nats announcers were talking about how, he felt like after that game, hey, maybe I've figured some things out here, And so he obviously had, because last night, that's the first time I've seen this Aaron Brooks pitch. And I liked what I saw. First inning, he struck out the side. He was throwing changeups that the Nats hitters couldn't hit. His changeup was diving on strike two. He had the Nats off balance all night. And even – he kind of set up the relievers in the later innings, because I think the Nats, a team that had scored 104 runs in the previous 11 games, 9.5 runs per game, I think that they got flummoxed last night. You know, that guy really put them off their game, and so you know, that's baseball, man. It's all about it's not about who's hot or anything else. It's about how good your pitcher is that night. And the Nats pitcher Patrick Corbin was pretty good. He gave up 2 runs in the first, but after that, he was Patrick Corbin. But he just, you know, if you don't score runs, you're not gonna win games. So that's the beauty of baseball, that you have to watch the game. You will see something every game that you've never seen before.
Yeah, you're right. Every game, you go to enough games, and I've been to plenty over my lifetime, plenty of major league games. And, you know, last night, of course, I watched the game on the Orioles side of the mound, and they were talking about, you know, of course, when you pick up a player off waivers, that means some team is basically giving up on him, but you would think that's the case, but if you listen to the Orioles broadcast of it, and certainly they're looking at it from the cup being half full, it's not always the case of a team giving up on a player. Oakland released him because he didn't have a position. Oakland got some very good young pitchers, and he wasn't fitting into their rotation. There comes a point in time where you just can't, especially a lower payroll team like the A's, can't keep investing in a pitcher like that, and they release him. The Orioles pick him up, they throw him into the starting rotation, and they may catch lightning in a bottle when that switch does go off, then he may be wearing an Oriole uniform. That's what you hope for. Well, his last two starts, he's looked very good. Now, conversely, you know, maybe the Nats just didn't have a real good book on Aaron Brooks because he hasn't pitched that much. He pitches in the other league. I know advanced scouting is phenomenal, but still, until you see a pitcher actually, until you probably stand in the batter's box against him a few times, a few games, you probably can't get that real accurate reading. So some of it could have been just because he was just doing something completely unique that the Nationals, you know, wasn't figuring out. He pitches against them again next week, which he won't because the series ends tomorrow. Tonight, they may just, you know, knock him out of the game in the second inning. That's the way baseball is.
Yeah, I thought whatever, not having seen him pitch before, whatever he and the pitching coach put together in terms of a game plan was expert. And I saw the Nats hitters trying to adjust second and third time through, and their adjustments didn't work. So, and this is a team that had been tearing the cover off the ball against a lot. You know, they beat the heck out of the Cubs this weekend, for example. And so, yeah, that was interesting. That's baseball, though. That's what we love about baseball. So. Well, I think, Scott, I'm going to wrap up the podcast here. Scott and I are heading to Pitt on Saturday. We'll be up there Saturday night. And hopefully by then, folks have figured out how to watch the game. If you don't already have ACC Network because you're one of the fortunate few who already have Lumos networks or already have Verizon or already have YouTube TV, etc., good for you if you're in the dark like a lot of folks. We'll try to do our best to tweet during the game, and then we'll, of course, talk afterwards. Scott and I will talk afterwards. It'll be a late night in Pittsburgh, but looking forward to that game and bringing you all the action. Of course, we have a lot of pregame coverage, too. I've got several previews from the UVA side, one I wrote today from the Pitt side. And so we're ready to go, and I want to thank everybody for listening. Wahoo, wah.